From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 100 years ago when woman suffrage became reality in New York State. It was, of course, the culmination of decades of work from the likes of luminaries, including Susan B. Anthony. To mark this occasion, the Votilla is coming. Next week, you'll see the Erie Canal filled with activities and a floating commemoration designed to educate and honor our history. Votilla will have stops in Clyde, Lyons, Newark, Palmyra, Fairport, Pittsford. And this hour, we're going to preview the Votilla, tell you what it is, how you can experience it. We'll also ask about what progress really means 100 years later. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. Deborah Hughes is the executive director of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House. Ready for Votilla?
I'm so excited, Evan. I can hardly stand it.
Well, it's great to have you here. Also here is Ann Kuhn, who is a professor emeritus at the College of Liberal Arts at RIT, a writer, an independent scholar, and has been involved in Votilla from the very beginning. That goes back to January of 2016. Ann, welcome to you.
Thanks, Evan. Great to be here.
Bruce Schwende is co-chair of the Fleet Committee for Votilla and a board member of the Canal Society of New York State. Bruce, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And also here is Jenny Warner, literary director and resident dramaturg at Jiva Theater Center and board member for the Image Out Film Festival. And when it comes to Votilla, do you have a formal title as well here? What have you been doing with Votilla?
I've been helping collate the speeches that are going to be given, but I don't have a formal title, so maybe that's something we could work on. But thanks for having me.
And you've had a lot of work to do. It's all about to happen. Votilla is that week-long commemoration and celebration of, by the way, Deborah, when we say woman suffrage, some people will say, did you say women's suffrage? Just help us with the distinction.
You'll hear all three used. You'll hear woman's suffrage, women's suffrage, or woman suffrage. It's really one woman, one vote. And so we went with that historic presentation. But you'll find it in books and in history all three ways. But Susan B. Anthony would have called it woman suffrage.
Woman suffrage.
One woman, one vote.
All right. So we're using the Susan B. Anthony construction of the phrase if you hear it throughout the hour here. And how did this idea form here? I mean, Deborah immediately turned to Ann, but what's the history of how Votilla came to be here, Deborah?
Well, actually, about 8 years ago, when we were thinking about the upcoming centennials, and we really were thinking about 2020, but New York's is along the way to that great big celebration.
Oh, I'm sure you'll have stuff to do in 2020.
I think we will.
Yes. Yes.
We were trying to think of how do you get a little attention to this amazing history? How do you bring the story out? And when we were looking at what they were doing in New York State in 1913 and 1915 and 1917, which were years of great pushes to try to finally get women the right to vote, they were doing street theater. They were going out and having parades. They were doing presentations. They were doing things to get your attention. And we thought, well, let's do something that will get people's attention so that we can tell this amazing and powerful story. And when we thought about it, it was, well, street theater. And the committee, which is our collections committee, started to think, well, we have kind of a road, and that's the canal, and it connects New York. We actually at one point considered floating from Buffalo to Albany. That would have been a little bit much. So, and then after we decided to do just a one-week experience, after we looked at all the calendars and what was going on, we wanted to really support our friends in Seneca Falls. They have convention days this weekend. It's an incredible program that's going on. So we thought if we're bringing tourists in from out of state, let's encourage them to come and do that, and then we'll start Monday morning. And then we get here, and we also decided if we're going to end a float with a party, let's have it in our own town. So most of the volunteers were from Rochester, and that's why we're coming from Seneca Falls.
How many boats?
There are five boats in the Votilla Flotilla.
The Votilla Flotilla, five boats, about 10 passenger boats, is that right?
They're 10 passenger boats. We have four or five people who are going to be sleeping on the boats each night, and then we have 10 riders.
And how did you determine, how did we figure out what each boat was going to do and who was going to be on board? What was that process like?
Well, that's been the 18-month process as we've been thinking about that. We knew from the very beginning in terms of our reenactors that we wanted it to be a very diverse group. People often think of the suffragists closer to 1917 as primarily white women, which that's true of a lot of it, but that's not true of the movement at all. So we've got Sojourner Truth was a suffragist. Harriet Tubman was a suffragist. Frederick Douglass was a suffragist, along with Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Cady Stanton. So a lot of our process was to say who needs to be there on which day so that we can really tell a story visually and in the speeches that we tell.
So let me ask Deborah and Anne, and then we're going to kind of get into some of the details and what you're going to see. But broadly speaking, number one, if you are on the canal and you happen to see the Votilla coming down, do you expect to get, you know, sort of people cheering and waving and kind of coming out to kind of take it in from
Evan,
the shores?
People turned out for beer vats.
I know. I mean, like, people were going crazy about the beer fermentation tanks. What Votilla should get, you know, tenfold.
Oh, yeah. Reenactors are really fun to see. We've got a pretty diverse cast. It's the votes coming along.
We have a fun project for young people along the way, children, through the local libraries. Our committee created a ship's log, and it's being distributed at each area, each library where we're stopping, and brought to the landing site so kids can get their passports stamped. And the map of New York State, which includes the Votilla route, has side trips along the way and information along the way. So we're hoping that families will come to the stop, get their stamp on the map or the log, and move to the next stop, perhaps following the boats, perhaps doing a day trip to one of the other partner institutions. But we're really hoping it'll be a draw to the canal to come see us at one of the 12 locks where we're passing through. But make it really a festive event that continues week long. People can drop in and drop out. But as I said, we're encouraging families to come.
All right, so the schedule is going to be where? Because I know our listeners are going to say, okay, Votilla, but how do I know exactly what's going on, the schedule?
Well, first you have to be able to spell it right, which is VOTELLA.org. And if you go there, there's a lot of information, and we're adding information every day. You'll be able to see where we are, when we're expected to be there, and so you can come spot us. We also expect we're going to have a dash cam on one of the boards, so you can see what we're seeing and check in on that. And I know Channel 10 is going to give us some visibility on our
Not familiar with who that is, but okay.
Yeah, Votilla cam. Yep. So it's going to be, people can follow along.
Votilla.org.
Votilla.org.
We're departing on Monday morning, is that correct?
Well, actually, the people who are on boats get to Seneca Falls on Saturday, and then we launch at 9, between 9 and 10 a.m. on Monday morning from Seneca Falls. You want to be there, you can wave, you can meet. At each of the places in the morning, our reenactors will be off the boat, so you can meet the characters and talk to them and have a conversation. And then when we land, we're going to be mingling with the crowd, and then we have presentations that we're doing.
Our first overnight is in Clyde. Monday night will be in Clyde.
Monday night in Clyde. Mm-hmm. And are you hoping for a little reception at each community when you come in here?
Our community partners have been amazing. People are giving us picnics. They're doing their own reenacting. We have music, all kinds of official interaction with Votilla. Bruce can speak to that. He's been our man on the ground from the beginning, reaching out to all of these small towns.
The folks along the way have really been very helpful to us. We've met with the mayors of all of the towns you mentioned, and we've met with the local communities in each of those towns, and it's wonderful. They are really excited. They have created events for us, for their community. They showcase the canal, they showcase their county, they showcase their town. We're very happy with their cooperation.
All right, so Clyde is the first night, Monday night. And just kind of set the scene for me. If people are out in Clyde, what's it going to be like when Votilla comes in, and then what's happening that evening?
Clyde is having a community picnic sponsored by the Gallen Historical Society of Clyde. And it's a wonderful organization. And they're working on feeding the public as well as those of us aboard the boats.
Very nice. And Jenny, why don't you also kind of take us through what we're going to experience, I guess, at the stops at the evening? Is that part
That's
of your
right.
focus?
Yeah, each evening, I mean, we're really kind of taking advantage of this idea of the street theater that the suffragettes were doing. And so there will be speeches being given each evening from, you know, the luminaries of the time. And some of them are people that, you know, I've been reading history and studying history for a long time, but a lot of these people are people that I actually didn't even know. Fanny Barrier Williams is an incredible suffragist who was the first African American to graduate from what we now call SUNY Brockport, and she's someone that I had never heard of before. But many of these speeches were given in the areas, you know, around Rochester, around between Seneca Falls and Rochester, or the person has a connection to the area. So we'll hear speeches, some of the most fiery, exciting speeches from people like Frederick Douglass, Susan B. Anthony, Lucretia Mott, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, you know, all of these incredible, Sojourner Truth's incredible anti-woman speech. I mean, all of these great speeches that that we don't speak that way anymore. And it's exciting.
Tell me more about that. When you say we don't speak that way, you mean with that passion?
Well,
you mean with that?
Partially at length. I mean, these are hour and a half, 2 hour long speeches. You will just hear excerpts from them, and we won't hear 2 hour speeches from Frederick Douglass. But no one writes that way anymore in the sort of oratorical style that they were using. So it's exciting to hear the speeches given in that way. They were incredible speakers. And the way that each of these people sort of whipped their supporters up into, you know, being excited to go out and agitate for their cause. It's really exciting. So these speeches that we'll be hearing are really kind of, we're hearing the peak moments of a lot of the speeches where they're really driving home their points.
And can you help us visualize what it was like with these, I guess, street performances, speeches, because it was a different time. It's a different culture. Obviously, we don't, not only do we not speak that way anymore, but we're not used to, I mean, that just doesn't really happen where someone bursts into some sort of a presentation and speech. And what was happening? I mean, would people stop? Would they know in advance? Would they gather and listen?
Well, I think it kind of depends actually on the circumstance. You know, some of these speeches were given at conventions. And, you know, there was a convention in New York City, actually, where there was a mob. They call it the mob convention. There was a mob trying to disrupt what was happening inside the convention hall. It was dangerous for women to be speaking to a mixed crowd of men and women. And they called those promiscuous audiences, men and women together in the same room. So it was dangerous. There was anything could happen. So that was at conventions. And some of the conventions, I think they were doing a little more kind of mundane, like day-to-day operational kind of things about how do we help move the movement forward. But they were all trying to get everyone impassioned about moving forward and being dedicated to the cause. We're also, when we are in Newark, it's the Taste of Wayne County. And so we thought we would do something a little different, and we're going to be using soapboxes. So we're going to be up on our soapbox. And the speeches will be given from various points along the Taste of Wayne County route. I'm not exactly sure what the Taste of Wayne County is going to look like, but we will be traveling along the booths that they have, standing up on our soapboxes and giving speeches, which I think is another way that it sometimes, you know, that this kind of agitation would happen.
You want to tell us a little bit more, Bruce, about what we might experience, and that's
yes,
in Newark. Yeah.
The Taste of Wayne County in Newark will have 30 vendors, each of them. We'll provide a little $1 worth item of food, a little piece of fried chicken, a little piece of avocado, a little lettuce sandwich here and there. And people will get 15 tickets for $15 and then spend their 15 tickets on the booths and in the process get a really good meal.
And maybe experience a taste of history then.
Absolutely.
And Jenny, is part of your role in helping coordinate this doing the writing, doing, you know, presentation? What's the role that you have here?
So I have been helping to find the speeches, find the excerpts. We talked in the committee about, you know, who we wanted to make sure to include. And so then I started looking for the speeches that they gave that were the most famous speeches of those people and the biggest, you know, most exciting speeches. And so I found the excerpts to use. And then I have written a sort of connecting framework for our MC. Chandra McKenzie will be our MC, kind of bringing it all together and leading us each evening from the beginning to the end of the program.
When you had to decide on what to include, for example, you mentioned the woman, what was the woman's name from Brockport, first African-American graduate?
Fannie Barrier Williams.
I mean, how do you find that story? As you say yourself, you hadn't heard of that. How did you come across it?
Well, partially, the history of women's suffrage is an incredible many volume, enormous story of the entire movement. And there are the proceedings of each of the conventions are in there. Also, so that's where I got a lot of the speeches. But Fannie Barrier Williams, in particular, there's a collection of her writings. And she did a lot of writing as well. So some of the speeches that she gives are actually from pieces that she wrote that were in pamphlets. She then moved to Chicago and became really involved in the World Columbian Exposition, which there's a lot of information about there, too. So it's kind of, it is a little bit of a detective, you know, trying to really find, there were some people like Hester Jeffery is a really interesting person as well, who it's hard to find. We have one recorded speech from Hester Jeffery. She gave a lot of speeches, but there's only one that still exists that was recorded. So it's been sort of an interesting detective work to find what speeches could be read.
Yeah, Deborah and Anne, we've had those kinds of discussions on this program alone where, you know, Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Susan B. Anthony, there are certain names that most Americans know. But then beyond that, it's like this woman suffrage movement gets credited to one or two or three people, and there are so many. So, Deborah, for you in this process of deciding, well, we're going to have presentations. We're talking about listeners, by the way, about Votilla in a second. I'll remind you what that is. You're going to have presentations all week. And it is detective work, but it's also deciding what you want to emphasize. You can't do it all.
Right. So we picked a theme for each of the 5 days. If you come to the program each night, Monday through Thursday, you'll hear different people and different speeches. Friday, we're kind of doing the best of at Cornhill. People often think of women's suffrage just as about the vote, but for Susan B. Anthony and for almost all of the characters that we're featuring, the vote was a means to an end of other kinds of social reform. So we're covering the period from 1840 to 1917. We're looking at abolition. We're looking at employment rights. We're looking at women's property rights. We're looking at all of those issues that were critically important to their time through which they hoped to achieve change by granting all the citizens the vote. And so it was fun, but it was hard work. We did lots of sessions looking at Anne and Craig and really saying, what could we do? Oh, my gosh, now how do we narrow this down and how focus it? And then when Jenny came into the project and arrived with all these speeches, it was like, oh, my goodness, this is we've been partnering with Jeeva because Jeeva had commissioned the play by Matt Smart, The Agitators, that's going to premiere in October. And so Jenny had done a lot of the research and working with Matt. And so it's kind of building on other relationships that we've had. But it's the hardest thing was how to
pare down. Yeah. Anne, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, I was just going to add the idea that the vote was a means toward other ends as well. You know, issues like dress reform that Amelia Bloomer made so much of an issue of, that the Bloomer costume became associated with her. She was supporting the vote because she felt the only way to secure the kinds of rights that women had in terms of temperance, stopping intemperance in their families, would be to be able to vote. Similarly, she felt that women needed an education and that was critically tied to their ability to vote. So particularly in the early part of the week, we connect the dots between these early reform efforts and the strategies that were being used that then sort of come together as the week goes on, and historically, you know, as time went on, we focus more and more singularly on suffrage, but really the multitude of issues, and many of them similarly developed along the path of the canal. You know, the geography of the state lent a kind of structure to these reform movements as people followed the path on the canal by horseback. You know, they got to from one village to another and carried the message in small incremental steps, the same way that we're moving in a very slow pace to kind of enforce that idea that progress is slow.
And Bruce, that was a logical path, wasn't it?
Absolutely. The canal corridor was the center of population for New York State. And so it was logical that those advocating for social change, temperance, abolition, and suffrage would travel that area of high population. And it's really appropriate that we're celebrating 100 years of women's right to vote at the same time we celebrate 200 years of starting to dig the Erie Canal.
Let's see here. There's a couple of listener questions on this. Sarah wants to know, can I get a ticket to be part of the Votilla?
You can. There's.
You can?
You can. We actually
you
are.
Get on one of the boats?
We're going to have a couple slots left for reenactors on the boats. That's actually not up, but that'll probably be up by tomorrow. You know, it's just always been a tricky thing of which characters we have. But we do have a couple where you'd be a day rider. It's $125, and you get on a shuttle bus at the St. John Fisher Park and Ride, and you get delivered to the site, but you have to be in your costume. and then you can ride along with us, and we'll feed you lunch and deliver you back to the St. John Fisher site at the end of the day. And we will have a couple of those slots available. We also have that bus going all day, so you can, and that is on the website, you can buy now. We call it the Votila Land Express, where you can get on the same shuttle as those reenactors are riding on and stay on the bus that's going to kind of follow Votila along and have, on Monday, they're going to go to see the Smith Opera House and then have lunch in Geneva and then join us as we make our way through Montezuma Wildlife Refuge and then come to Clyde. And so there are ways for people to participate on a daily basis.
All right, so it's Votila, and it's VOTETILLA.org.
And if you forget how to spell it, you can go to SusanB.org on our main site and click through.
Votila.org. We're talking about next week's Votila, that week-long commemoration and celebration of the 100th anniversary of woman suffrage in New York State. That journey starts on the canal Monday morning formally. They come into Clyde Monday night. And then if you're thinking about family schedule, events, you want to take your kids, you want to take this opportunity to maybe educate a young child about what this actually means and what how the world was different and how the world changed, you can wave to the Votila as it goes by, or maybe go to some of the events that we're talking about here, because the Votila is going to be making stops in Clyde, Lyons, Newark, Palmyra, Fairport, Pittsford. So you have a chance to hit all of those, and it's Votila.org. Our panel is talking about these events, and here's another question from a listener. Michael wants to know, will Belva Lockwood be recognized? It seems like she's an important Western New Yorker, often overlooked, and this is a centennial of her death.
No, unfortunately, she's
she doesn't have a speaking role. She may be on one of the boats as one of our, we're calling that the supporting cast, but she does not have a speaking role.
Cast of suffragists, and that's just an example. And there's a name, by the way, Belva Lockwood, that, you know, that's not a history that I know of. But, Michael, thank you for sending me information there. There's so many in terms of the suffrage movement that I just feel ignorant about. So what I want to do is get our only break of the hour and come back. And I've got a question for our panel when we come back that was sparked by something I listened to recently about a concept called moral licensing. We're talking about woman suffrage going back 100 years. But I think Deborah Hughes made an important point here. It wasn't just about getting the vote. It was the vote tied to so many different things, property rights, real equality. And I assume also in there is political power, the chance to run for office, the chance to gain political power. And there are some concerns that some people have about a concept called moral licensing. I'll introduce that, and we'll get our panel's thoughts, and then we'll continue to work through the schedule. If you've got any questions and comments about Votila next week on the canal, commemorating 100 years for the vote for women in New York State, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I'm Evan Dawson. Thursday on The Next Connections, RMAPI, the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, has been in the news a lot lately with questions about how money is spent and what the results have been so far. We're going to sit down with the executive director and get an update. Then in our second hour, the Summer of Food continues. We're talking to Sarah Goodenough. She lost more than 120 pounds going plant-based. Now she's doing meal delivery services. We'll talk about that. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, and we're talking about Votila next week, commemorating 100 years of woman suffrage in New York State. Deborah Hughes is the executive director of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House. Bruce Schwendy is co-chair of the Fleet Committee for Votila, and he's a board member of the Canal Society of New York State. Ann Kuhn, professor emeritus at the College of Liberal Arts at RIT. She's a writer, independent scholar, and has been working on the Votila project since its inception. And Jenny Werner is literary director and resident dramaturg at Jiva, and board member for the Image Out Film Festival, and she has been intricately involved with these evening presentations that you're going to be seeing all next week that a lot of people are really, really excited about. What I want to ask our panel about is this. Pop psychologist and writer Malcolm Gladwell did a podcast last year on a subject called moral licensing. I'm hot and cold on Gladwell, but I think he really had me at least considering this concept. And here's the short definition of moral licensing. It means doing something that helps to strengthen our positive self-image, but it also makes us less worried about the consequences of immoral behavior, and therefore then more likely to make immoral choices. In other words, you do something good, you feel good, like, well, I'm a good person now, and that gives you more license to do something not so good. And for Gladwell, the classic example is the many nations that have elected a grand total of exactly one female head of state, and then never elected another. In other words, those nations could congratulate themselves for being progressive, breaking away from the patriarchy, and then they get back to strengthening the patriarchy. Here's a clip from the podcast. You're going to hear him refer to former Australian Prime Minister Julia Gillard, who took repeated verbal abuse from a man named Tony Abbott in Parliament. Let's listen.
She thinks that somehow something has changed, but nothing has changed. The men pat themselves on the back, and then they slam the door shut again. Tony Abbott, the man she eviscerated, he later becomes Prime Minister of Australia. By the way, here's a partial list of the countries that have had one and only one female leader. Open the door, pat themselves on the back, close it again. Ready? Brazil, Germany, Costa Rica, Croatia, Nicaragua, Latvia, Panama, Bolivia, Ecuador, Pakistan, Poland, Turkey, France, Canada, and of course, Australia.
That's Malcolm Gladwell from his Revisionist History podcast. Deborah, woman suffrage seems to me to be tied closely to electing women to positions of power. And do you share his concern that too often we take a big step forward in history with some kind of form of progress, and then sort of the dominant power reasserts itself, that we have to guard against going backwards after stepping forward?
I was thinking about when we started planning Votilla. It was 2016, and we were trying to get a little bit of attention for Susan B. Anthony and the suffragist movement. And then election 216 happened. And at the Anthony Museum, compare our attendance, a year ago was 9,800, this year it's 13,000. So I can't think of a year when Susan B. Anthony isn't more relevant than she was last year. And it does have to do with the same kind of issues. And I think there are all of the issues that we're bringing out through the reenactors, we are letting them speak for themselves. We don't have to translate anything into the 21st century.
It feels really
you
really
hear these
crisp
words
and
you say, "Oh my gosh, that's what I've been trying to say," or "I can't believe we haven't come beyond that yet." And we chose specifically. We didn't put any words. Only our narrator has a script that we've written. Everything else, we're taking the words out of the mouths of the 19th century, and you can see both that passion, that hope, the progress, and the frustration, and how far we still need to come.
Jenny, when you were going through these speeches, these presentations, do you agree? Did you find yourself going, "Wow, this could have been written in 2017?
So much of it absolutely is about things that still are relevant today. I mean, the Equal Rights Amendment has never been passed, and this is something that they were starting to talk about. I think that they weren't using those words, of course, because they were talking about voting, but women are not equal in this country. And those are the things that they were talking about, then. And they're still the same. They were talking about, women don't get equal pay for equal work. We still have that conversation today. And it's interesting that you bring up, the idea of a woman in office, because there were actually, that was a huge fear at the time, that if women got the right to vote, then gosh, they'd want to actually be voted for, and that was, I think people were really terrified of the idea at the time of a woman in office. And sadly, I think that's still true in America.
Yeah, I went back and I was thinking about when Gladwell put that podcast together. He wrote that he thought Hillary Clinton was going to win. He was among the many people who expected that last year. Of course, he was wrong. But his concern was, it was almost a warning to our country not to get too self-congratulatory. And by the way, whatever your politics are, his point was, don't get to the point where you think, well, we've elected a woman now, see? So now we are truly equal. This is a truly equal nation. Et cetera, et cetera. It was almost a preemptive warning that if it's Hillary Clinton, okay. If it's somebody else in the future, okay. But one time, a one-off, does not necessarily mean progress. What do you make of that?
Wow. I think the idea that with greater opportunity comes greater opportunity for doors to close is really, it's disturbing. It's disturbing, particularly when we think of the generations of women and men with them who have worked to create opportunities for women, that what we see are glimpses or brief little bubbles that open and then those immediately close over. It would be easy to be disheartened by that position. I think that we need to continue to see opportunity as just that you open the door and keep on going, pull others through, keep forging ahead. The reality is many women know in their bones exactly what this means. They didn't have to be elected to leadership of a country to experience that brief moment of promotion, acceleration, opportunity, and then see other opportunities evaporate. So I think it's a very complicated position that Gladwell's describing, but I think it certainly is something that at the individual level, individual women could identify with. And as a country, I mean, a lot of people were hoping for a great sea change in what America saw as possibility in that last election. And now have to be, I think, take some satisfaction from the fact that a woman ran. And let's not hope that that's the last time a woman can run at that level, because that would really be a cynical illustration of the point that you're exploring here.
I want to take some of your phone calls and comments in just a moment here. But as I said, I'm sort of hot and cold on Gladwell, but it really did get me thinking about this. It has me thinking about some of the frustrations, not the right word, but just the work that people like Scott Fearing and the Gay Alliance do in making sure people don't have this disposition that says, well, we've got same-sex marriage across the land, so I guess the gay rights movement's over, you know, because if you get too self-congratulatory, you miss the other issues that are still pertinent and the other inequalities that are still out there. Deborah, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, for me, the issue isn't about gender at this moment. The issue is really about being democracy. And I think that's really what we hear from these speeches. They were really trying to sort out states versus federal powers and rights. The whole idea that if you don't see something right, how are you going to change it? And what they were saying in the 19th century is, I can't do anything if you don't give me the vote. I don't have any power. I'm not a threat to those who are doing things I don't like to do, and I can't support those who want to run. I think we're at the moment right now where we are really thinking about how are we going to be democracy? How do we do that? And where my greatest frustration is when people say, well, it doesn't matter if I vote. It's like, it absolutely matters if you vote. If we could engage and empower and get people to be thinking about how to be more effective as citizens and voters through Votella, then, boy, we would have exceeded what I hope we would be able to do.
All right, let me grab a phone call. Votilla.org, VOTETILLA.org. This is Andrea in Fairport on the line. Go ahead, Andrea.
Hi. I was wondering if Matilda Jocelyn Gage is going to be included in the Votilla.
She absolutely is. She has a big role.
Does she?
Okay. Yeah, she does. Absolutely. She's got a couple of really fantastic speeches. Let's see. I'm just trying to look through my list really quickly to figure out which day. She's on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. She'll have speeches those days. So definitely check us out then.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Andrea, thank you. And just a note from producer Megan Mack tells me that Matilda Jocelyn Gage was a suffragist, a Native American rights activist, and an abolitionist who was born in Cicero, New York. So three different occasions, so you can get some of the perspective. And so thank you very much, Andrea. I see the phone ringing again. If you've got more questions or comments on Votella, you can bring them to the program right now, 844-295-TALK. Before we get back to your phone calls, I know Ann and Bruce in particular wanted to stress a point here. This is, in many ways, a celebration, a commemoration of woman suffrage, but there was a lot of historical work that went into this, to the point where you even have historians who are going to be traveling on the Votella?
Absolutely. We were committed from the beginning to bringing in historically accurate material, not only the primary source materials that went into the speeches, but also we wanted to bring in the best scholarship that's being done today. We have a local panel of scholars speaking at a luncheon in Pittsford. We have scholars on the boat every day, a featured scholar, a different person each day, who will be sharing, in this case, her research, talking about connections to, in one case, civil rights. Others have written books on various aspects of women's history, the women's right to vote. But they'll be engaging the reenactors on the boat. They'll be, in some cases, when we land, doing small talks or book signings. As much as possible, we're trying to integrate scholarship, solid, good work that either has been done in the past or is being done right now. How are today's scholars looking at women's studies? Women's history. How are they looking at women's suffrage?
All right, and Bruce, you wanted to add to that as well?
And we're also traveling on boats that are remarkably similar to the packet boats of that early era. And they're being piloted by captains who will be dressed. We've researched the dress of the packet boat captain from the 1800s, top hat and all. And so they will be dressed with a long coat
In mid-July. I mean, it's
a whole week we're on these.
It could really be cooking.
They will cook.
Yes. Yeah. No, I actually think the forecast looks really good for next week. So, and milder than it could be. So, but a lot of emphasis on historical accuracy on all the details. It sounds like
exactly
Bruce.
Right.
Yeah. Let me grab another phone call. Stephen in Rochester. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for the discussion. I really liked Mr. Gladwell's warning towards ethical licensing. And just as a point of comparison, I wanted to point out that I often hear people referencing the election of Barack Obama for the point that racism is now dead. And
exactly.
I kind of saw the parallels there, and I thought it was worth mentioning. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen, for that. That is exactly what Gladwell is talking about, and that's what the concept means there. It's also the concept of people who might behave in ways that are, we would say, are racist or discriminatory, but they counter with, well, I have a black friend. You know, you hear that kind of, that's the moral licensing, that they think, well, I have a friend, X, therefore that gives me a license to behave in a way because it's some sort of insulation against immoral behavior. And you're right, I think the broad case of Obama, it gets invoked a lot there. So let me grab Susie in Canandaigua next on the phone. Go ahead, Susie.
Yes, will they be using any Erie Canal horns to signal their arrival in any of the ports?
I guess that's for you, Bruce.
Well, that's my daughter.
Hi, oh! Susie.
And yes,
you can say hi to Susie. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Susie. And yes, I have a couple of original Erie Canal horns, and yes, we'll be bringing them on the boat. Thank you for that.
Have a nice day.
Thank you, Susie. And so that'll be fun. That'll be... I know there's a lot of emphasis on historical accuracy, great presentations, but Deborah, I also get the sense that this should be fun too, right?
Yeah, I think that's that's the interesting piece. It's fun. One of our writers said to me yesterday, she said, this is an experience of a lifetime. Although maybe we'll be doing it again, not next year, but in 2020. But it is this combination of, it's just plain fun. It's like a week of camp for all of us. And yet some of what we're delivering is fun and some of it's quite poignant. So it's a lot of different things.
And you got a big smile on your face.
Well, there's going to be a grand welcome when we actually arrive in the Corn Hill. We will join up with a lot of boats on Friday, other boats joining us along the way, including some rowing teams and others. We're going to have a small plane flyover towing a Votes for Women banner, as we might have seen in the 19th century or 20th century when the vote was actually being finally promulgated. So there's going to be a lot of festivity, a lot of celebration at the site, particularly at Corn Hill when we get here, the music that day. What other?
We have so many partners that have made this possible. On Friday, we have some group from Aquapa is going to be doing a special presentation, one of their presentations on the pier. We also, Aquapa is also doing a presentation with us on Thursday, in addition to a number of our reenactors are from Aquapa. So that's just a great partnership. And the city has planned a women's music conference for Friday night, which is pretty amazing, all intentional and coincidental with what we're doing. And then on Friday, we have to get Susan B. Anthony to her house. So we have a picnic, which is the suffragist city parade, that will be going from the court in Exchange Street, stepping off at 10:30 and marching to
10:30 Friday morning?
10:30 Saturday morning.
Oh, I'm sorry, next Saturday morning.
Next Saturday morning to the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House, where we're having a block party where the Old Songs Group is going to put on a two-hour presentation of 19th century songs and their presentation of the story of women getting the right to suffrage. We have a couple of book signings.
The Genesee Country Village women's baseball team will be playing a stool ball game in the park by the Susan B. Anthony House. This is the Saturday after the end of Otilla, after we arrive back in Rochester.
So it's two Saturdays from now.
Correct.
It's the end
correct.
Of next week. Yeah?
Correct. So there are events all day, and then the next day the AAUW is planning a wonderful picnic at the Perkins Mansion, and people can get tickets for that event. And the First Unitarian Church is doing a play that's based on Rochester's Women's Rights Convention from 1848 at 10 a.m. during their worship service. So there's stuff happening all weekend with some of the partners, and we haven't really covered all the days of Votilla yet.
I know. So let me grab another phone call, and we'll continue to do that. And I'm just thinking of things that families might be planning. I've got a five-year-old. We're going to make sure we're on the banks of the canal at several points, waving and cheering. You know, it's a great opportunity to show him a little bit of history and in ways that I think he can absorb. So let me get back to the phones. This is Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, even if people
spin things as, well, this is just a fluke, or this is a token of woman in office and we won't do this again. Still, with the vote, it has resulted in our being able to pressure the executive in appointing Supreme Court justices, and we scored fairly well, I think, on that. So that's one more benefit of women especially getting out and voting. And I just wanted to make sure we remember that. Even Ronald Reagan, you know, appointing Sandra Day O'Connor. So no matter which side of the aisle, there, we've broken that glass ceiling. And I think that there's hope in looking at that. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Appreciate the phone call. Some thoughts there? Deborah?
Yeah, I think that we're very aware of how much legislators can influence all the other branches as well as the president. I think, you know, when we think about the value of a vote, it was one vote in New York State's legislature that tipped the scale for marriage equality. It was one vote in the Tennessee legislature that ratified the 19th Amendment that gave women the right to vote in the country. So everybody we elect is important.
I'm looking at the clock here. We've got about 10 minutes left, and maybe we'll do this for families, for anybody in our area. If you want to check out Votilla stuff, votilla.org. Next week, they depart Monday morning. First night's in Clyde. I think, Ann mentioned, you mentioned every day there's a different theme. Is that right?
That's correct.
So why don't we kind of go through town by town, day by day, night by night, and some of the themes here, and that'll get people kind of set up for this. So I'll follow your lead here.
Yeah, so on Monday we're really looking at the roots of social reform. So what are the topics that were being advocated? Where did this all begin? Why were we trying to give women the right to vote? And so we're kind of looking at you know, things like abolition and temperance and just women's equality in general. And you know, I think the idea that before women had the right to vote, the only way that they could try to influence anything was through petitions. And you know, clearly that the petition movement didn't work because nobody had to listen to a bunch of names of women who didn't have the right to vote. So that's Monday's theme. Tuesday's theme is strategies for social reform. And so that's really sort of okay, these are the things we know we need to work on. How do we affect change? Wednesday is belief, conscience, and power. And so really kind of looking at the role that the religious movements in this area played and the power of women in that, how women could take power. Thursday, now I can't remember what Thursday is.
Thursday's a little different because we get to Pittsford earlier and we have our scholars luncheon that afternoon, and our three scholars who are writing a book, which is Nasty Women and Bad Hombres, a discussion of the 2016 election, will be sharing their panel there at the Pittsford Library. That's a ticketed event. It's $35 to join us for the scholars luncheon. At 3:30, Aquaba will be presenting their presentation, A Time in the Life of Frederick Douglass, Shields Green, and A Woman Called Moses. It's a very, very powerful presentation. And then our theme is the Union in Fact, a Union in Spirit, and kind of focusing on the vision of a country, of a democracy that really would be about all the people, by the people, for the people. We skipped over in Lyons in Newark on Tuesday night. Bristol Valley Theater is doing a special presentation. Their theme for the whole summer is Hear Me Roar, and it's a celebration of women's suffrage in New York State. And they're bringing up one of the actors who's doing a wonderful play that's about Inez Mulholland, who people sometimes recognize. She's the woman who rode the white horse in one of the famous suffrage parades. And so after having taste of Wayne County and listening to our reenactors, you can walk over to the Newark Garden Inn. It's a free presentation, and watch that play that's less about 45 minutes, I think, altogether. Wednesday we're in Fairport, and Fairport planned all kinds of things in addition to Votilla. Go ahead, Bruce.
Yes, and along the way on Tuesday we stop in Lyons for lunch, where we'll be visiting the Peppermint Museum. Then we go to the historic Oman Theater, where we'll hear a 90-year-old historian give us one of the speeches that was given by Susan B. Anthony in Lyons historically.
And that's all open to the public.
It's all open to the public. And also when we arrive in Pittsford, there's a children's table on the landing with children's activities, coloring and identifying various things that relate to women's suffrage. Fairport's, on the landing.
Fairport's organized a debate, anti and pro woman suffrage, and they also have some other presentations in every town. I think the mayor and others are coming out to greet us and say hello and have a little bit of fanfare.
I have to ask this on the subject of debate, and this is so ignorant of me, but I think I've just glossed over even spending any time reading what the actual parties would have said back in those days about why. Why did we have a country that went this long without granting women the right to vote? What was the main argument against it?
Well, if you thought that a woman was going to vote in a different way from you, you came up with every argument you could.
But was there a main singular argument against it? It
changed over time. Initially, just they had to get past the notion that women were capable of thinking through political issues.
All right, so it was intellectual. It was just discrimination on, okay.
Yeah, and it was discrimination for women, for people of color, for people who were immigrants, for people for whom English wasn't a first language, for First Nations people, for people who were Chinese. I mean, there were all kinds of ways to say, well, you don't really know what democracy's about. You're not, you don't think like we do, and so we can't give you this power. Then it was the whole question about, well, look at Congress. It's a bunch of crazy people who aren't very effective, and they just deal with a lot of conflict and violence, and why would a woman even want to be connected with that? It would damage your soul if you got engaged in the...
Oh, we're just protecting women by keeping them away.
Exactly.
You don't want to be involved in messy politics.
Exactly.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was the whole notion also of a woman's sphere, which a woman's sphere was not in the elections. So a woman's sphere was in the home. And also, heaven forbid, she should have a different opinion than her husband. And I think, you know, they were afraid that if women had the right to vote, it would create disharmony in marriages.
Well, Deborah mentioned a vision of fact, a vision of spirit. Did I write that down correctly?
It's the actual phrase is a union of fact.
A union of fact. I'm sorry, a union of fact, a union of spirit. Yeah. And what you mean by that, tell me again the meaning behind it, Deborah.
That comes from one of my favorite speeches of Susan B. Anthony to the Women's Loyal League. And it was during the time of the Civil War where they had organized a convention of women who were in support of the union, a support of the president. For Susan B. Anthony, the whole point at that point was to end slavery in this country, to move for abolition. But it's surprising if you read the speeches, not all the women who were there felt that that was the agenda or that that was appropriate. They were supporting the union, but not necessarily emancipation. And Susan B. Anthony gives a great speech. It's a powerful speech where she basically says, since the time the first person was put in shackles and brought to this country, we've been at war. And she doesn't want to go back to the union as it was before the beginning of the Civil War. She wants a union in fact, a union in spirit, a union where all people participate.
Sure, and sometimes the spirit of our country has not always been matched by the fact of what we are. And that's why I got an email from a listener who was offended to hear on this program we were talking about the Declaration of Independence on Monday. Professor Michael Oberg from Geneseo said that this country would not have been founded and could not exist without native dispossession, and that that's a mark of shame. And understanding that and talking about it is a way for us to move forward and try to guard against that. Somebody said, no. We were always founded on liberty and freedom for everybody. You know, 3/5 a person... Women not having the right to vote. We have a lot of those of really sort of shameful chapters, but I don't think, Deborah, that acknowledging it makes us lesser. I think that gives us a path to rectify.
Yeah, I think at any time, you know, the thing that's so exciting and fun about human nature is that we have this capacity to be so compassionate and so hopeful and so resilient. But we have to also acknowledge that human beings have the capacity to do horrific and awful things. And I think history lets us acknowledge those realities so that we can work to bring out the best and to ignore the things like greed and all that stuff and to pretend it's not there, then it catches you off guard.
And I'm going to put you on the spot. We're down to 90 seconds for people who can't do every event, et cetera, but they're thinking that I can do one or two. You know, I can squeeze some time in. What should they do next week with Votilla? That's so unfair. It's the most unfair
well, they
question.
Absolutely, should come to a landing site to see people either getting on or getting off the boat. So that gives you an opportunity to come early in the morning. Most days we're leaving, but 9 or 10.
O'clock.
They can get the exact time, or to come at a landing hour. And again, we land at different times during the day, so it's pretty flexible. If you had just one thing to do, I would say come and see the reenactors and everyone else that's riding. in their finery when they're getting on or getting off, and then you'll get a sense of the richness of this experience and the diversity and enthusiasm of the many, many people who've made it happen.
And the Rochester arrival is when?
Cornhill, Friday afternoon at 1:30.
Friday afternoon, next Friday afternoon, 1:30 is the Cornhill Rochester arrival of Votilla. Again, five different boats. They're going to have about 10 passengers apiece, historical reenactors, and different stops along the way: Clyde, Lyons, Newark, Palmyra, Fairport, Pittsford, then Rochester. The full schedule and information, votilla.org. It's VOTETILLA.org, or Susan, was it SusanB.org? SusanB.org will bring you there if you don't know how to spell it. But it's votilla.org, and I just want to thank our guests for giving us this historical background. Jenny Warner, it sounds like you've done a tremendous amount of work. I'm excited to see it, and I know you are too. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Bruce, the canal has gotten a lot of love this this week on the show. So
yes, it does, deservedly so.
Bruce Rundy is the co-chair of the Fleet Committee and board member for the Canal Society. Thank you for being here. Ann Kuhn, professor emeritus of the College of Liberal Arts at RIT, and really a Votilla heavy lifter from the beginning. It's finally here. Enjoy it. Thank you for being here.
We're thrilled to be here, and thank you, Evan.
You got it. And Deborah Hughes is the executive director of the Susan B. Anthony Museum and House. We will see you out there next week. Thank you.
And also, we've got our three boats. The other two boats, one is the Susan B. Anthony Center for the University of Rochester, and the other is the Women's Rights Park from Seneca Falls. And we, all of the partners, have done an incredible job.
I'm going to regret 10 seconds. What's right after Votilla? 10 seconds. People should know. Seneca Falls, what's going on?
Seneca Falls is this weekend.
Oh, it's this weekend.
And they should look it up starting Thursday all the way through Sunday. Incredible program, lineup of speakers and events and reenactments.
We'll link it on the podcast so you can check it all out. Have a great day, everyone.